What is that, ma'am?
Everyone is surprisingly healthy, considering the deadly quality of life. But when someone like John gets an out-of-the-ordinary sickness, there's no resistance to it.
Forgive me, Mildred, but I think you have already made us fully aware of that.
Slowly, and with an infinite delicacy, Mildred gave Doc the finger.
I haven't finished, you doddering old cretin.
Oh, well, then I yield the floor to you for your further elaboration of this most puzzling enigma.
It works both ways. Two-edged sword. Just as John went under fast to the bite, so he's responding far faster than usual to the healing power of the antibiotics.
So you think he's going to make it?
You ask him for my prognosis? I'd say he was facing a 70% chance of recovery. This time yesterday, I wouldn't have put it any higher than 10%.
By midday, she was ready to go up to 90%. The door was pulled three-quarters of the way open, filling the dismal basement with fresh, cold sunshine. Ryan and Doc had gone out an hour earlier on a brief expedition to try to scavenge some more wood for the fire. Twice, in only a couple of blocks, they heard distant whistles, indicating that the Scalies were ranging in their direction. And once, Ryan spotted a ragged figure spying on them from an empty second-floor window. Mildred celebrated JB's easing back toward health by insisting on cleaning up the cellar. Everything that wasn't nailed down got moved. The piles of rags and blankets were all swept up and kicked to one side, eventually placed in a tumbled mound in the farthest corner of the basement.
Can't stand house cleaning.
Everyone stopped what they were doing and turned to face the speaker. JB was still lying on the floor, but he was propped on one elbow, looking at the subsiding pillar of dust that contained Mildred Wyeth.
John!
I've been sleeping. My cheek hurts.
JB raised a hand to touch the cicatrix on his face.
Don't, John!
Okay. I remember being bitten and feeling like a scaly had pulled most of my brain out of my skull. What happened next?
It took some time to bring JB up to date with all the happenings of the past few hours. There was a small flurry of snow around 3:30 in the afternoon, which lay in a thin, powdery coverlet over the city's naked ruins. JB sat in a corner of the underground room, propped up by old blankets, sipping at a can of hot stew, courtesy of Harry Stanton. The armorer had said that he had a vague recollection of meeting him long years ago, but the description of the stout figure with white hair and mustache didn't ring any memory bells. Christy was sitting on the top of the flight of steps, only her head sticking out into the open, keeping watch for any danger. Mildred was helping JB to eat, and Doc was fast asleep, lying on his back and gripping his silver-topped cane, like a crusader on his tomb holding his sword. Ryan had decided to field strip his weapons, and had just begun with his pistol.
Company coming.
Scalies?
No.
Luckily, the Sig Sauer wasn't disassembled, and he quickly ran to join her. Behind him, JB was shouting for his own blaster, and Mildred was trying to find her own ZKR 551 target pistol. Doc was still fast asleep. Ryan's immediate assessment was that the new arrivals were one of the juvenile street gangs, such as the Hawks, that Dredd had run with. They were about 15, wearing nondescript fur and skin jackets and pants. All had on fur caps with a bright yellow splash of paint on the side. Most of them carried little homemade zip guns, but two of them had rebuilt carbines. There were three young women in the group. When they saw Ryan and Christy, the gang stopped, spreading into a skirmishing semicircle. The leader was tall and skinny, and he had an extremely long blonde mustache, the ends dangling beyond his chin.
You outies?
Mildred, wake Doc up and tell him to get his ass up here.
Seen any scalies here?
Ryan ignored the second question as well, watching to see how the teenagers at the end of the line were still moving around, trying to enfold them, like the curving horns of a buffalo.
You stop or you get chilled.
Blue, orange rolling supper. Red, hang Louie. Color, eighth circle.
The gang all started to move in different directions. Ryan guessed that the tall leader's shouts were some sort of battle code.
Asked if you'd seen scalies here. They've been moving north and east out of their turf, taking our friends for their fucking slaves.
Seen them near the river.
You got many friends there?
Enough.
We don't think there's many of you. Maybe only about three or four. And those fine blasters.
Move on, kid.
We aren't kids, Audi. You fucking wrinklies come into our ville, make like you own the place. Well, you got a lesson coming.
Be a lot of blood spilled.
The gang was uneasy, shifting feet in the icy snow, breath frosting around them. The nearest was about 50 yards off, and there was plenty of cover for them. Ryan wasn't altogether happy about being held with one narrow entrance to defend. Only two of them could stand there, and if the gang rushed the cellar, then it could be either side who'd win.
Christy, I'm going down for the caseless. Keep them talking.
Ryan dove into the basement, allowing Mildred to replace him at the top. JB was against the wall, as pale as fresh-fallen snow, gripping his blaster in both hands. Doc was on his feet, looking around for his Lama.
Where in thunderation? We under attack from hostiles, Ryan?
Could be. You haven't lost your blaster, have you?
Got to be here someplace, dear boy. Just a matter of laying my hand. Ah, here it is. Now, damn the torpedoes. I'm ready for them.
Street gang, did you say? Can you hold them?
Hope so. About 15 or so of them. Crappy blasters. But it's difficult to defend that flight of stairs.
Want me up there?
Looks like they're going to try it, lover.
Be right there.
JB, stay here. It's the best place. Hit anything get past us.
Ryan?
Yeah, just getting the G-12. Ah, fire blast.
There was no sign of Ryan's precious blaster. The Heckler & Koch G-12 assault rifle had vanished. It had been tucked under the pile of rags he'd been using as a makeshift pillow before Mildred started
tidying up.
Ryan knew he had precious seconds. The weapon had to be in the cellar. Nothing had been thrown out in the maelstrom of dust and dirt that Mildred had whipped up, so it was underneath the mound of stuff in the corner, beyond JB.
Ryan! Hold them!
The one-eyed man delved into the stinking rags, furs, and torn lengths of filthy cloth. The dust was everywhere and made it impossible to see, and he worked by feel. Suddenly, his fingers felt the familiar rectangular shape of the automatic rifle. He turned, blinked through the haze of roiling dirt, and saw that Doc was close to him. Mildred was at the bottom of the stairs, trying to reload on the move. Christy was also retreating.
Got about 7 or so, but they don't give a shit. They just keep coming.
Out of the way, lover.
Ryan flicked the main control on the G-12 onto full auto, pausing a fraction of a second at the bottom of the steps. He picked his way up until his head was nearly level with the top, then peered out. The survivors of the gang were obviously gathering themselves for the final assault, conveniently grouping together about 20 paces from where Ryan stood. Behind them, he saw at least a half dozen corpses and two wounded boys, one trailing blood from a wound on the side of his head, the other crawling toward cover, dragging a broken leg.
Ace on the line.
Ryan braced himself and squeezed the trigger of the blaster. And just like that, every one of the street gang was down and dying. At such short range, the bullets didn't tumble at all, hitting clean at enormous velocity, leaving untreatable exit wounds. Ryan had fired from the shoulder, absorbing the minimum recoil, countering the slight tendency to drift upward that was a failing with most automatic weapons. Mildred was first up the steps to join him as he slowly lowered the G-12, conscious of how much lighter it felt with an empty mag.
Judas's blood! You took them all out in one! Even the kid I clipped in the leg!
5 or 6 were still moving, rolling in the light snow. But in less than a minute, there was only stillness and 15 sprawled bodies. Ryan turned his back on the bleeding corpses and walked back into the cellar, ready to reload the automatic rifle. Ready for next time. The working party had been sent down to the docks to a long shed that had been converted by the Scalies from its pre-nuke usage as a tobacco warehouse. Now it was arranged to gut the quantities of fish that they caught by ranging up and down the Hudson River. Not that any of them ever called it by that name. To the Scalies and to their captives, it was simply the river. Now there was gray ice, lacing on the edges of the steely water. Ice on the slapped counters, ice on the piles of fish, of all shapes and sizes. 20 of the Norms stood along the side of the heavy metal-topped table, each chained to it by the ankle. The table itself was bolted to the slippery stone floor. Iron buckets were positioned at intervals to be used for either the offal or for the gutted fish. Dean was one of the workers, who were mainly young boys, or in a couple of cases, older women. He held a short-bladed knife in his right hand. Dragging a thick-skinned eel or monkfish from the pile in front of him and holding it still with his left hand, for many of them were still wriggling in their death throes, he plunged the sharp point in behind the skull, drew it along the body, and opened it up to reveal the spilling intestines and the mesh of white bone. a turn of the wrist, and the gut spilled out in a gray and pink clump. They went into one of the buckets, the boned and cleaned fish into another. For some of the fish, they had also